Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, J. Michael Michael here, and if you're like me, you love talk radio. And like me, you just can't find the right stations for your talk habit on the AM dial. Well, how about you tune in to LA Talk Radio? You see, latalkradio.com has it all, from sports to politics to religion to, well, just talk. And right now, we have the beginning writer's very favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, put up your feet. I hate that phrase, put up your feet, and enjoy it, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
I don't know who in the world doesn't know what that music for.
We got Wes
sure,
over here dancing.
I was sure you were going to use the theme from Paladin.
No,
Suns
I
didn't.
Will travel.
But this was a good
because James West was a secret agent, and of course, Evil Stryker was a cavalry officer, and
yes.
Now he's an assassin.
Yes, he is.
He's a wanted man.
This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio with Bob Brill.
Hey!
Hey, Bobby Jean Bell on the phone.
Howdy,
and
y'all.
We have our guest right here, and it's Mr. Wes Rand, and we're looking at one of the books that he's written called Payback is Hell.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
Was that it? Am I close? Well, you can talk, Wes.
Well, like, there were
it is radio. Okay.
the first one was Left to Die, and then Cross Cut and Payback is Hell.
Right. There you go. There you go. Well, let's tell the folks a little bit about you. And boy, it's really short, too. Born and raised in East Tennessee, you're an Army artillery officer.
Wait a second. You got to say, if you're from Tennessee, you say it's Tennessee, right?
He doesn't know.
I left there when I was 19.
Oh, okay, so. Well, forget it then.
Okay. Born and raised in East Tennessee.
East Tennessee. That's probably true.
Army artillery officer, moved to Las Vegas in 1970. And if you live in Las Vegas, you don't say Vegas.
That's true.
You say Las Vegas.
That's right.
Or
in San Francisco, you don't say Frisco.
That's right. He's a businessman by trade. Of course, he has not given up his day job to do his writing. His character is evil and nasty and, got ways to kill people I never even thought of.
but we love him, don't we?
We do. So please,
you got some thumbs?
Please welcome to The Writer's Block, Mr. Wes Rand.
Glad to be here.
Oh, well, we're so glad to have you. I mean, you truck over all the way from Las Vegas just to come visit us.
I did.
And, if you want to tune in, and you can see us live on Facebook Live right now, you can go to Facebook and to LA Talk Radio, and it'll be right there live.
We'll
be
there.
So they can see everybody but Wes's wife, Pam, who's sitting over in the corner.
Over there.
Hiding.
And I apologize for not shaving.
Why, nobody?
Yeah,
oh,
no,
one
mile there. You know, I mean, it's been a hell of a week, as we all know.
fires finally are out.
Yes, pretty much. Yep.
Pretty much, and so we're kind of back to, you know, people just getting shot now our normal turn of events during the day. So, Bobby Jean, how are things in Albuquerque?
I see you all. Wes is wearing a really cool plaid shirt.
Isn't that cool? Nice. I walked. It was almost Halloween. It was so electric.
He was like wearing this huge Stetson too when he came in the door.
I wanted to look the part.
There it is. So let's get right into this, because we're going to have a lot to talk with Wes about tonight. And your character, Evil Stryker.
Yeah.
I don't know where in the world you came up with Evil Stryker, but you're going to have to tell me, because that guy is pure black. I mean, he truly is.
Well, I came up with the word evil first.
Well, okay.
And then I tried to figure out how can I make evil with a regular name.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while, but then I came up with Neville.
Okay.
Neville Stryker.
Neville Stryker.
And then, of course, mm-hmm. some of the over the years, the weather and use wore some of the letters off.
Sure.
So the saddle skirt.
Evil.
So the evil. And
I like it.
Most people think mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. evil fits him better than Neville.
Well, Bobby Jean made a comment to me the other day when I was talking to her. And I have a habit of calling Bobby Jean at least once during the week before the show's on.
Okay.
And we had a book on a couple weeks ago. Is that right, Bobby?
Yes.
About the mafia.
Con Morte.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
Con Morte. Yeah.
About
a hitman. And boy, she said, oh my God, I just don't know if I can finish this. It's got so much nastiness in it. And then she reads your book. And she goes, this guy's got more ways to kill people than I've ever heard. At least the other guy shot him.
Yes, he'll sleep with one eye open just to keep from kicking his own ass.
I know.
But this book and this series is just chock full of all kinds of you take us across a landscape. I mean, we're with Native Americans, we're with Mormons, we're in the mines, we're on the train. To me, it was just so fascinating that we covered so much territory, even beginning searching for Sitting Bull in the prologue way back at the very beginning.
Yes.
And I
yes.
think I found that helped for me to make it more interesting and readable than the situation book that we had a couple weeks ago.
Well, I mean, the fact that, you know, there's so many different ways, and I have to ask you this, is was there one particular way as far as murders, kills, deaths, that you really had a struggle with?
Well, the sai, using the sai, mm-hmm. which it was an Asian weapon that he was taught when he was young. I had taken the martial arts years ago, and I had to learn how to use a particular weapon. That was the weapon that I learned to fight with in the Tai Kung Fu. And I had to go back and review the moves because I stopped doing that when I was 40. I think it was about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That's the same for us, too.
Yeah.
So I had to go back and review some mm-hmm. of the moves just to make sure. Because you never know. Someone who's proficient with a particular weapon,
right.
and they think, well, this guy's full of crap because he doesn't know what he's talking about. So you had to make sure that those moves are correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that you used, actually, you were very correct in pretty much everything you did.
Well, thanks.
I mean, Bobby Jean says you're the one that's going to catch it if it's wrong. And I mm-hmm. didn't catch anything.
I do some research, but you never know.
No.
You never know.
No, you never do. And, you know, I mean, good God, I'm just trying to get your way through a book.
Yeah.
And then you find, oh, now I got to research this, too. Yeah. Then you put something in and you go, oh, crap, now I got to research again.
Well, in the artillery, you know, I knew a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Background. And then I went and visited the areas where I take mm-hmm. The story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I make notes on the topography and mm-hmm. the plants and the weather mm-hmm. and everything and, mm-hmm. and try to get it into the story correctly.
Yeah, I do that as well. I do that. And I try to really make it as realistic as I can.
Yeah.
You know, in the prologue, in the second paragraph, you introduce us to Captain Neville Stryker, and he's dealing with dysentery. And this is many years ago, as we're starting the book, and he treats it with pine leaves mixed with egg whites. And I think for me, that told me, you know what you're doing, and I could rest assured through the rest of the book that you were going to get the details right.
You use that remedy, have you, Bobby?
No, she just goes out and digs holes in her backyard.
I have read that was a remedy. And for me, I think I was just like, okay, oh, okay, we got Custer. Okay, I got it. Oh.
Well, I mean, in defense of the cavalry troopers, more of them had dysentery yeah. than didn't. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a malady that was suffered greatly in the military. That
probably lost more people to that over you
well,
know,
it's a sick
times.
Call for, yeah. sure. Yeah. for sure. I mean, if you look at the sick call registers from the 7th Cavalry during the campaign, mm-hmm. a lot of them were in sick call because of dysentery.
Yeah.
And it's horrible, dysentery. I mean, you know, you get it in Vietnam and you get it in the Philippines.
Well, especially back then, who knew how to treat it except when you come up with remedies? Right. Everything's a homemade remedy.
Yeah, pine needles and, you know.
Egg whites.
Egg whites, yeah. Whatever binds your system up, you know, hey, go for it.
Kind of hard to get a banana out on the prairie.
All right, okay. Yeah. Enough about the poop train.
Well, I'm glad you picked up on that.
Yeah, you'd be surprised what she picks up on.
Bobby is the avid reader.
She is.
I mean, she devours everything.
She does.
Matter of fact, you can call her at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm not giving out any secrets.
And she's up.
She's got a glass of wine and some chocolate and the book. You know, so that's Bobby's life.
Yeah. Bobby. Until she started doing the Cowboy Festival, she never read Western books.
Really?
No, she read. All true life, real stuff books.
Yeah, nonfiction for the museum. It was all nonfiction. Right. No fiction to speak of.
Yep, and we got her into The Hunter, and we got her into a whole bunch of other Western books.
And Stryker.
Now she's into Evil Stryker.
She bypassed Jeff Stryker and went right to Evil Stryker.
They're related, probably.
More than likely. Except, no, I don't think so. Stryker's not half Chinese.
So, Wes, where did the idea for this character come from?
I'd read a lot of Western stories, watched a lot of Western movies, and I just didn't like the idea of the good guy in the white hat always capturing the bad guy and taking him back to stand trial. And I wanted a bad guy to be just as bad, mm-hmm. if not more, than the bad guys. Mm-hmm. So that's how Stryker, he came around. So
yeah.
I wanted him to deal with the bad guys in a way that I wanted them dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is there somebody in your life that maybe you patterned him after or stole something from? Or?
You know, I had read some of the George Gilman books 100 years ago, and those were the Edge series.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked those stories. And then I read all of them. I think there were like 67 or 70 of those books, and I read them. And then,
really?
And then I thought, I want to read some more. And George has stopped writing them. And I thought, well, I'll take a crack at writing one myself. And then, you know, I had made this mm-hmm. character. And I wanted him to be a really, really vicious, vicious man.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of our new readers and new writers especially struggle with putting together characters and how they get their characters put together and fleshed out. Can you kind of give them an idea how you did your character, Stryker?
Sure.
Even Stryker.
I've
got to watch him because my character's
I had some help with some classes that I took on writing at UNLV, and the professor's name, I think, was Faye Fine, and she said, make your protagonist, your hero, bigger than life. So I did. So I said, well, okay, I'll make him bigger than life. And also, I'd read a lot of books where I couldn't pick out what the character looked like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about the protagonist, and then they go on in the story. And I wanted to make sure that I fixed the way my hero, Stryker, wanted people to have his image fixed in their mind. Mm-hmm. So I'm very vivid with his looks. The eyes that have pale gray ghostly eyes, with eyes like an eagle, mm-hmm. And just a very mean-looking man, very vicious. And then throughout the book, I'll go back and remind the reader what this guy looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And I give him some good things that he's very proficient with, like the gun and the blade. And so I give him some characteristics that I think, hopefully, that will stand out in the reader's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And... So far, it seems to work.
Now, I pictured him all in black. I don't know why. I just, probably from Evil Stryker, I just pictured him all in black, much like Lancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
It's interesting because when we talked about Lancer, I'm the opposite when it came to my character. I want the reader to figure out what that character looks like, you know? And I was listening very interestingly to what you were saying about how you describe your character as, bingo, this is what he is. That's what I want everybody to see. Where I take the opposite view, and I want the reader to say, does he have curly hair? I picture him with curly hair. I picture him with straight hair, blonde hair. And I just found that very interesting. What led you to that particular thing? Was it something inside you that you really felt you wanted to, or did that come from somewhere else?
Yeah, I wanted to bring the reader into the character to where when there's a scene that takes place in the book mm-hmm. with Stryker or with any of the other characters for that matter, but chiefly with Stryker, I want the reader to be able to visualize that scene and see him in action.
Would you have done that if the character was a good guy rather than an evil guy?
I never thought of that. But probably not,
okay.
because I want the evil, because he's actually a good guy. I mean, he's an anti-hero.
I was just going to say, he's an anti-hero.
Hero, right. Yeah. I wanted him to be projected in the reader's mind so that he can... That reader can look at this person and say, wow, he really is one bad-looking SOB.
Well, he's just a bad dude all the way around. I mean, everybody who sees him doesn't want to mess with him.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody says, you know what, they mean, that's a guy I want to stay away from.
Yeah.
You know, but the women, and I really like the gal that is it Atoy? I'm not saying that right.
Yeah, she was really a madam in San Francisco during that period of time. And she was very attractive.
I liked her character, and I liked Morgan, and I even liked the three Mormon wives. You know, I really like how you write the women characters, and they all are a little attracted to him. The men realize right away he is fierce and you don't want to tangle with him, but that fierceness is somehow attractive to the women.
Go, okay, tell your husband stay away, I'm gonna get naked with this guy.
Well, there is I think it's in the first book, Left to Die, I have that questioned by one of the characters. A young boy is asking an older fellow why a woman was attracted to Stryker, and the old fellow replied, "But the leader of the pack."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe, huh? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've written some characters that I have some really good bad guys.
Yes, you do.
But none of them come up to Stryker, and he's a good guy. I mean, I have like the ghost and the snake.
Yeah.
And the deacon and the preacher,
mm-hmm.
both were actually...
The preacher.
They were both demons. Yeah. They had taken over human bodies. Interesting stories.
Well, I wanted the reader to perhaps even wonder if Stryker was the hero and then figure it out when he's the only one left alive at the end of the book.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, he has to be the hero because he's the only one left.
So he can carry on to the next book.
And not to give away anything from the story, but I liked when Morgan came back into his room the next morning and saw the violin. And so and then he goes, well, yeah, she was here last night, and you know, I'm just waiting for her to come back. It's just not likely. Why? Because she jumped off the roof last night.
Right.
I don't think it was because she was with Stryker.
No.
She had other issues.
Yeah. I'm not going to go there, but it's interesting. I've never read a character that was quite like Evil Stryker.
Good. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you haven't.
Never have.
You know, Wes, as I opened the book to read it and saw the main character was Stryker, of course, immediately I'm thinking of my good friend Jim Christina, who writes about a Stryker character. Uh-huh. Right, Jim?
Right. That's what I was thinking, too.
Distant relatives.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Brothers from the different mothers.
Different Stryker strain.
Yeah, because this is a very different character. I was curious why you chose to have him be with, I think, an Asian. His parents are Asian and, was it Norwegian?
The father part Norwegian and the mother a mixture, Mexican, Asian. I wanted to have him use the sai as one of his weapons, and I needed to work in some background there to show why that could be possible.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's a nasty weapon.
It is.
But he as a young man, he goes through the Civil War. He goes to West Point. It doesn't appear that his lineage closes any doors for him, which I also thought was kind of interesting.
In the fourth book, To Die For, which I'm currently writing, I'm about two-thirds of the way through, I take the reader back and show what happened to him growing up on the waterfront there in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And he gets the heck beat out of him by some thugs. And his uncle, who's on his mother's side, teaches him how to fight with a sai. And he kills a couple of guys as a teenager. And the uncle decides, I got to get him out of San Francisco or he's going to die.
Smart move.
And so he sent him east to go to school. And he got caught up in the Civil War before he could complete his schooling. Mm-hmm. And then while in the Civil War, a general sees his fighting abilities and recommends him for West Point. And so that's where he gets his educational background, is in West Point. And I intentionally have him as a character with fairly good grammar. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. I did.
Mm-hmm.
And an understanding of language, which a lot of guys don't.
Yeah, I read a lot of books where that's aw shucks and hey partner and so forth in the Western stories and the writing. And one, I probably don't know how to write like that. And secondly, I thought that I would only use that kind of dialogue with certain characters.
Exactly. I learned while I was writing, I've written a series now, I think I'm at what, book number 13 or 14, that it's really hard to write stupid. You know, when you have a character that is stupid, it's really hard to write a character that's stupid.
What's that comedy?
Yeah.
Comedy is very difficult to write. And it takes a special talent to write comedy. And I think, you know, the biggest problem I have when I'm writing a character like that who is an ancillary character is remembering when I go back to write, you know, as I'm writing it later in the story, how did he say that? You know, and I can go back, way back and check it out, you know. I think that's a pitfall that I think we all run into.
Right. I actually wrote two characters, Bobby Jean, you probably know who they are. That are kind of give comedic breaks in some of the books that get really down and dirty. Like Stryker was one where he's chasing the ghost and the two guys, the bounty hunters that are really bad, try to nail him and he doesn't let them. But they're Lenny and Whitey and they show up in two books and they're just like two old ladies that are constantly at each other for everything. You know, if one guy does something, it's not right. You know, it's that kind of a deal with them. And it just go on and on and on and on and on. And it's like, I had a great time with them, but it's hard to write them.
Yeah, you mentioned comedy, and I do put a little bit in the stories because I don't think you could just drag the reader through one violent episode after another.
Right.
And so, mm-hmm. like, there's some Shakespearean comedy relief. I don't know if you caught that with Alacrity.
With the name more than anything.
where she experiences these different
yes.
So I threw that in there for a little bit of comedy. Plus it was fun to write.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I think for me as a reader, I was a little endeared to her, and somehow I knew she wasn't going to make it out alive.
I know, huh?
You know, it's just, it's like watching a James Bond film and thinking, you know, every one of these people, they're not going to make it out. I was surprised Morgan made it out alive.
Well, Morgan didn't show up until three-quarters of the way through.
I was going to kill Morgan in the first book, but I made her up and liked her too much.
She's cool.
And
yeah,
I thought,
she's cool.
Damn,
yeah.
I can't kill her.
No, you can't. Boy, if you do, you're in deep poo-poo.
They say you're not supposed to kill animals. And I guess that also worked for
goes
some.
Goes for good women.
Although Hemingway wrote a lot of, you know, his stories always ended in tragedy. And I try to have, you know, because Stryker is haunted by his tragic past.
Right.
And but I can't kill Stryker, otherwise I wouldn't write any more books. So what I have to do is develop likable characters and kill them off.
There you go.
Yeah, well, you did it very well.
I did that with Jolly Goodman, so I'm just a character that you don't know, but I killed him off after the third book.
Yes, yes, yes. I didn't think I would ever speak to you again. Now, I was surprised that he, because Stryker, he seems to have eyes even in the back of his head. He anticipates every kind of move that could happen. The guys in the mine. I mean, he's just really on top of it. But he gets slammed in jail, and you put him in jail. And I wondered if it was partly because you wanted us as a reader to experience what jail was like at that time. How did you decide to do that with him?
Well, once again, I'll hark back to this professor that I had, Faye Fine. Another thing that she said about your main protagonist, your main character, is give him a dark moment in the story. So I had to come up with a dark moment for Stryker. I had him in the mine, in the mine shaft, but I also wanted to get him into a situation where it looked hopeless. And so that's how he ended up in prison.
Eric Heiser just checked in.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. I was just saying, hot air. Hey, Sundown.
Oh, and Gary Holt is watching. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Gary. Good Lord, we spent all night saying hi to everybody.
Exactly.
Quite an audience.
I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned your military background. And tell me a little bit about that, but also how you were able to weave that into your stories.
Well, I wanted Stryker, like I say, he went to West Point, and so I needed him to be proficient in a certain area of the service. And I was in the artillery, although I did not go to Vietnam. I think the Army felt that our troops would be safer in Vietnam if they kept me over here as a forward observer.
Safest place to be.
Yeah,
is it front of an Uzi?
I had orders to go, but they never sent the travel voucher.
So,
I never called and asked for them. But I thought, you want to bring realism in, and I needed him to be proficient, so I just made him an artillery officer.
Gotcha.
And and I can talk a little bit about that in the story with some knowledge. You know.
Yeah, it does help. Because it gives a ring of authenticity.
Yeah. So. And you know, he's kind of an asshole, and I guess people have thought the same way about me.
We're good. Hey, we're going to take a few minutes here and spend a little money, and then we'll be back with you in about a couple minutes. So, Bobby Jean, you want to take it?
Oh, my goodness. I just had a swig of coffee. Okay.
Coffee,
here we go.
Right.
No one needs another boring shirt is one of the most famous quotes of Rockmount Ranchwear's founder, Papa Jack. And Out West asks, what's on your wish list this holiday? A bohemian-styled shirt with dazzling embroidery and a pinch of rock star bling? Or go Americana with a cozy plaid flannel shirt to chase the chill away? Come on over to outwestshop.com to find the perfect shirt for everyone on your list, even for yourself. Use coupon code GIFT, G-I-F-T, all in caps, and save $10 off your order of $50 or more. Call toll-free 1-877-340-9378, and we'll chat with you. It's always a great day out west.
Yay. Okay. You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended. And so is your kid out of kindergarten. But, what about the dog? Well, all dogs rule day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and extra training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. When your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. Well, we know you're off. It was the dog. All dogs rule. 805-524-1100. And if you're a new writer and you think you just put a manuscript and you just typed your last period and you stacked your chapters and you're all ready to go, thank you for playing. It takes, that's not even close. It takes editing, and it takes more rewriting, and it takes more editing and rewriting and more rewriting and formatting. And then, here, you want to be on there, Bob?
Yes. Oh, and your eyes go buggy looking at the
And your eyes go buggy, and then you have to proofread, and then you need more rewriting. So if you're lucky, you can finally get put together a cover, and you can get some proofs printed, and then you can rewrite those, and finally you get a book that you can put on your table. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very small investment, we can do all of the above for you, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing. And helps you to get some dollars in your pockets as well. We are here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea what they're doing. So having learned it, we can share it and help you get a book of which you can be proud. So give us a call, 805-795-3165, or email jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpaolinelli, P-A-O-L-N-L-I-N-E-L-L-I, and I butchered that, P-A-O-L-I-N-E-L-L-I at tuscanybaybooks.com. Or just send us the manuscript and let us navigate the rest for you. Okay, it is now 7:31. We are in the studio with writer Wes Rand and Bobby Jean Bell and Bob Brill. And we have phones that are open now if you want to call and talk to our writer in studio. The number here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay. Now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty, and we're getting down to the dirt here, Wes.
All right.
All right. When you're putting together a story, do your stories bank off your last book? Do your stories follow a progression?
Yes.
Okay. When do you know that the next book is going to be what it's going to be about? Is it halfway through, all the way through? When you first start writing the first book, did you know what the second book was going to be?
Yes.
Well, you can expound on that just a little bit.
It's not a lie detector.
Well, you never know.
I've always been a person with imagination, actually daydreaming probably, instead of studying Latin or algebra. Okay. I think I was looking out the window daydreaming and stuff.
Yeah, that works.
And I'll start the, like I've started, I'm working on To Die For, and like I said, I'm about two-thirds of the way through that. About halfway through that, I started thinking about the next book.
Mm-hmm.
The next book is called Christmas Slay, and okay. It's S-L-A-Y. And it's going to be about a town in Northern California that at around Christmas time. And so I thought I would start building the story around that. And, you know, it's like a cloud. It starts to form, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then it becomes thicker, and then becomes something of substance. Mm-hmm. You know, I start putting a kind of a rough outline mm-hmm. together in my mind.
Which is a question that Bob likes to ask, and I'm going to beat him to it tonight.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you normally write off an outline, or are you a pantser?
I'm a pantser.
Yeah. We are too.
Well, I think that oftentimes I'll sit down, and I'm probably works the same with you. I'll sit down and heck, I don't know what where the story's going.
No.
And I'll often sit down and say, "Geez, I wonder what Stryker's up to today." And I'm writing, and the story just takes off.
Exactly.
And I follow it.
Well, that's what happens, I think, when you really get to know your characters. They kind of take the story over, and they take it where they want it to go.
Right.
Yeah. All you're doing is clicking the keyboard.
Yeah.
You're following them.
Following them, yeah. and writing down what they're doing.
Right, right.
And that, you know what? That makes it more fun, I think.
I think it does, too. You know, it can make a book shorter or longer. It just depends on where the story goes.
Well, it kind of creates the gets the creative juices going.
Right.
I mean, it's an old phrase, but I mean, it really does. It sort of takes you where you'd like to go, maybe. Yeah. Maybe in sometimes better cases where you didn't want to go, you mm-hmm. know, and the character goes there, yeah. you know, which is... I was going to ask you about Something Jim likes to always ask.
Well, you're gonna ask. yours, so you're gonna ask his.
When do you like to write? I mean, you like writing in the morning, night, and where? I mean, do you have a special place in your place that?
I have a fairly large chair in the western room upstairs in my home, and because I have a day job, I'll go in and I'll work out, and then I'll come in, take a shower, and I'll sit down and I'll write for an hour, hour and a half. Mm-hmm. I prefer to write early in the mornings, on the weekends. So like on Saturday and Sunday, I'll get up at old dark 30. Mm-hmm. And
military term, my goodness, where'd that come from? Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And then start writing. And I do have a place, a cabin up in the mountains up in Utah.
Oh. Okay.
So I go up there as often as I can, and generally, it's just myself. Pam enjoys playing golf, so there's not that much golf up there in the mountains. So, so I go up there and by myself and get up early in the morning and just see what Stryker's up to.
And when you do that, is sometimes you take a laptop someplace else, or do you just basically keep it all there?
I carry the laptop up there. And I have, you know, of course, like everybody else, I have several laptops. Mm-hmm. And
like four. I do have four.
And I brought one on this trip down from Las Vegas, and I'll probably get up in the morning and put a few words.
You're not a Starbucks writer or anything?
No. I actually need I need to be alone and by myself so I can get down into some deep creative thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bobby Jean, going to ask the other question.
Bobby Jean can ask it now. Bobby Jean.
Do you want to? Well, actually, can I ask a different question besides that one?
You can ask whatever you want.
Okay. I was very intrigued by the cover art. The first two books have different covers. We see an image of Stryker on the third cover. But, you know, they reminded me years ago at the Autry Museum, we had an exhibit on Polish cinema poster art. It was extraordinary. And as I looked at those images, it kind of reminded me of Polish movie posters. May I ask about the inspiration behind those covers?
Okay. Are you talking about the old covers or the new covers?
I don't know.
The new covers do not have Stryker's.
The covers that I see, I guess, on Amazon.
Yeah. The new covers don't have Stryker's picture on there. I'm working with Tim Chesmar. And he's been really great at helping me in doing the re-editing and making a better presentation, I think, on the covers and also getting out there and building my brand. But the person that I made Stryker on the covers in the first books, I actually hired an outfit back east. And they had a model who came on. And I tell you, the eyes were really tough for them to get.
They're evil.
I had the eyes. I had seen the eyes of an eagle. And if you look at an eagle's eyes, you'll see that's where Stryker's eyes came from. His eyes are the eyes of an eagle. I wanted him to have the eyes of a predator bird. And to when people see him, to have some fear that this guy is one bad character.
Mm-hmm. Mofo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where that came
mofo.
From. And it took quite a while. I would say it took the better part of a year to get that character in the first books to get some idea what he looked like. And the main feature on Stryker is his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's actually looking at the covers, the old covers that you were saying,
yeah.
We had,
mm-hmm.
I Stryker's features reminded me of Nosferatu to a degree.
Well, I'm that fails me. I don't know who
Nosferatu
that is.
Nosferatu is a East European vampire.
Oh.
Yeah.
With the eyes and just the way his face looks. He looks almost dead.
Yeah. Oh. Now, when I looked at the cover, I thought the same thing. Yeah.
And with the table manners of Vlad the Impaler?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, your descriptions. I'm just reading this. I'm going, oh, my God. It's no wonder he shot him in the head.
Oh, wow.
All right, Bobby, ask the question.
Okay. Oh, okay. So this show is called The Writer's Block, and we love to have our authors share. Do you get it? Do you not believe in it? If you do get it, how do you get around it? If you don't believe in it, why the heck do you think we talk about it?
That's the question?
The question is,
the question.
Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have,
oh, writer's block.
What do you do about it?
Frankly, I have not. Oftentimes, like I said, I have a kind of a wild imagination. And so I'll be thinking about the stories a lot. Mm. And when I wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep, I'll think about the next scene, where I'm going to take it. So generally, well, 100% of the time when I sit down to write, I know where the scene's going. Mm-hmm. And so, no, I haven't had the writer's block.
Hmm.
I hope I never get it. I'll knock on some wood here.
Yeah,
that's not really wood.
But no,
okay, I'll knock on my wooden head.
Knock
How's that?
Micah.
You know, before we came on the show, we talked about indie writers, and you've tackled that as well. Has it been difficult for you to get this thing going for you?
You know, I've run across some good people who have helped me. And I'm now glad that I went the independent mm-hmm. route, because it gives me the freedom to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm not under the stress of a schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, I just I write, and then when it comes out, it comes out. I don't have to feel mm-hmm. forced or stressed out because I'm not
right.
meeting someone else's schedule.
Right, right. Yeah, I found the same thing. And like right now, I'm working on a book. I don't even know what chapter I'm in, 16, 17. As I told you before the show, my wife is my editor, and she constantly says, well, you know, give me the two previous chapters, because it's so long in between chapters now that I get lost to where I'm at, so I have to go back and reread.
Yeah, I write 5-6 times a week.
Hmm.
So it's not that difficult for me to pick up where I left off.
Yeah, and how long does it take you normally from beginning to end?
You can write a story in about 1/4 of the time that it takes you to edit the doggone thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it takes me about a year.
Yeah. I know, I was telling Jim last week that we shot our latest Western film, the short film, in 5 hours, and it was 100 hours of editing. So, that's not an exaggeration. That's the
right,
actual truth.
Right, right.
You
right.
know, so.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the things that I think young writers or new writers are shocked by, is the amount of time that it takes in the editing process and the rewrites.
Well, they don't think there is any.
Oh, no.
And every new writer thinks, okay, I've got a book, I've got my chapters done, I'm going to put it in, if they're going to publish it, rah, rah, I'm going to make a ton of money and I'm going to retire.
Yeah, I think that thinking that their poop is great in the first...
Absolutely. And we have a call coming in for you. Thank you for calling your writer's block. This is Jim. Who am I speaking to?
Hello, Jim. Hey, this is Robert.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
Yes, hi. I'm a fan of Wes Rand. I've read his stuff for a long time now. I was curious. In the beginning, he went with Lulu, and now he runs his own publishing house, Wild West Books. I was curious what that process was like, and if there's anything he would have done over, and I'll take my answer off the phone.
Thanks for calling in. He'll give you your answer right now. But not somebody who's paying attention.
I guess so. Thanks for reading my book.
Thanks for your call, Robert.
I started working with Tim Chesmar here earlier this year in January, and he's the one that's guided me in that direction and said, you get off of Lulu and develop your own publishing house, which is Wild West Books. And so that's what I've done. And I actually recommend that to young writers as well. You know, get yourself to where it looks like it, that you have a reputable publisher, mm-hmm. and not one that brands you as an amateur writer, as an
right.
novice.
Right.
What was the process like with that? Did you set up a corporation? What did you do?
Well, I have an LLC, but mm-hmm. that wasn't the reason why I set it up. I set this up with the idea that I was going to have more professional work, more professional help with the editing and the publishing. And going with Tim has been a big help in that. Working with Lulu, they were fine. I didn't really have a problem with them. And they got the books out there. But they didn't give me that on-hand, you know, that personal service that working with someone like Tim has given me. And he's been a valuable asset, and I'll continue to work with him.
Oh, good. We have in the Tuscany Bay, we have a sheet that we send out to beginning writers, and it's how to shamelessly self-promote. And it's like 3 pages, and it's really good info, and I'll send you a copy.
Yeah, Tim helps me with the promotion and the publishing and stuff, you know, I really hate to do. I just like the
writing.
But
you know what? Every writer is the same. Bobby,
yeah, I'm sure.
You hate to promote. We all love writing. Everybody hates promoting.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, but you know, when you hate to promote, you get that first blast. You're written. You go on Twitter. You go on Facebook. You go on all the social media stuff for about 3 weeks, hot and heavy. And it's like, okay, I'm on the next project now. Oh, crap, I forgot. I got to go back and do some more of that, you know. Right. And after you've hit all your friends and all your, you know, everybody else. Yeah.
Send out your big blast emails.
Yeah.
Well, we have to build our brand.
Yeah.
And well, absolutely.
That's the
toughest no
part
way around
all of us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why, you know, publicists exist.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and... You know, find a good publicist that will make it happen for you. And there's some good ones out there, and there's some bad ones.
Oh, yeah, run across those.
Yeah, and there's some really good ones who we can't afford.
So that's why Mickey is he's one of the best around.
Yep.
Bobby Jean is calling? Why is Bobby Jean calling?
Did you
Why
hang
are
up
you
on
calling? Her? Did we hang up on you? Bobby Jean?
Yeah, I just lost sound totally. I can see you on Facebook chatting up, but I've been like mute for the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We really weren't saying anything.
We have to wrap it up anyway. So
you'd be wondering where the heck I was.
Well, actually, Bobby, we were talking behind your back.
We were. That's why we muted you. Well, anyway, we're going to wrap it up. We're going to wrap it up now anyway, Bobby Jean, so... Nothing
no worries,
lost.
No worries.
No,
no
loss, no gains.
Whatever you're talking about.
Okay. Well, Wes, thank you so much for coming in and joining
us.
It's been
a great time. Yeah.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
The hours just went boom,
yeah.
Gone.
I know. I was looking at my watch. I couldn't believe it.
Yes. I mean, 50 minutes is what our show length is, and we've been busy for 50 minutes. Well, 47 minutes.
Yeah, so. we did 50 minutes in about 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems like it. Yeah.
You know, you can always tell when a guest is good because they fly by.
Thank you.
Because there's been some writers on our show that we're looking at our watch going, holy crap, it's not done yet.
Did I pull my teeth yet?
I know, huh? But, I mean, the last 6 or 7 have been tremendous, and they've just flown by. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
And so I know it's a hassle driving in from Las Vegas, but hey. And I'm sorry we cannot catch your call right now because we are going off the air. But thank you for calling, whoever is calling right now. Okay. Next week we have we're down for Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
The week after we have I do not have the name of the writer for the week after. I'm so sorry, Bobby Jean. Do you happen to know who it is?
No, I know the book came my way today. I'm sorry, I don't know.
Okay, well, at any rate, wait a minute. I think it's Jim Jackson.
Yes,
Jim Jackson.
Yes.
And he's a Canadian writer, and he will be with us two weeks from today. And, of course, we'll have a special guest in the studio that night with Mr. Eric Heisner who will be joining us.
That'd be a fun.
And I warn you again, Eric, you got to read the book. Because we're going to flip you crap about it, trust me. And Bob is not going to let you get away with it. Okay.
And he will be in gear. We know that.
So it's just been another wonderful evening here broadcasting here on KMBS. That's right, Kmart Bullshit Radio.
I didn't remember those.
Bobby Jean, have yourself a wonderful evening and enjoy Albuquerque even more than normal. What? Hello?
I'm saying happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Thank you all for listening and joining us. Bob, always a pleasure.
You too.
Again, thank you for joining us, Mr. Russ Wade, and for myself, and Bobby Jean, and Bob Brill. We are out of here.